Well, another week is in the books, and joining us for our Reporters Roundtable are Betsy Russell, Boise Bureau Chief with the Idaho Press, Kimberly Crucy of the Associated Press, and Bill Manny with the Idaho Statesman. Welcome to you all.
Thank you. Thanks.
Well, these are the longest days of the year here in summer, and we think about outdoor activities, camping, maybe even getting your tailgating ready. We have some official news in regard to that activity. Betsy.
We do. Yesterday, the State Board of Education voted for the first time ever to actually authorize tailgating with alcohol before University of Idaho football games. Now, a lot of people might think, gee, hasn't this always been happening? But it has never been authorized by the board. And at Boise State, there have been a lot of arrangements between the police and the city under a city ordinance as to how that's all been managed. But as far as university property, it's never been okay. It's been against board policy. Now, this vote, so the U of I has pushed this and said we should acknowledge this is going on and regulate it. And they brought it to the board, and the board voted 3-2 to allow it at the U of I. They have not yet voted on BSU or ISU. It was a close vote, and two of the members said they did not favor expanding the availability of alcohol on university campuses, particularly around events such as college football games.
A split vote, and only right now for the U of I.
That's right.
Might it also proceed to the other universities?
The other universities will be back in August to get their approval for basically the same thing. There were three members of the board absent yesterday. So who knows what the vote will be then?
Bill Manny.
So, Tom, what struck me most about Betsy's story was the state board kind of bemoaning how much time they end up spending debating alcohol policies and how that takes them away from their chief goal of talking about education. Also, what strikes me is this feels like Casablanca, right, where the guy's saying, I'm shocked that there's drinking before our football games. It seems like a silly use of time. And I think Boise's got it figured out with a nice policy between the school and the police department. Maybe they just ought to follow that model.
Mm. I'll stay with you, Bill. Cynthia Sewell's piece in the Idaho Statesman just yesterday talking about Senator Mike Crapo's use of campaign funds. Now, 9 of the past 11 years, his election staff failed to properly report certain spending. People at that point, as reporters, we would call that a trend line or a pattern. Maybe you could dive deep into the details on this.
So I think that's what prompted Cynthia to take a deeper look was this pattern of problems. There's also a watchdog group that's filed a complaint about some of Senator Crapo's reporting. The allegations included failing to report in-kind contributions, including at that townhouse where EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt got a sweet deal for resigning, failing to report a bad loan. Took several years before they reported that a loan to somebody else had gone bad and it was a big loss for the committee. And then also payments to Mike Crapo's wife for various functions and giveaways for campaign items.
So, and the details on that is over the past two decades, Crapo's campaign has paid nearly $200,000 to his wife, Susan. And also in 2017, the campaign gave her a $17,000 lump sum that prompted questions from the FEC.
It's been a sore point in the past and again. And in fact, Raul Labrador's campaign also pays his wife. So it's not entirely outside kind of common practice. But this amount of money, the various ways that they were doing it does raise questions. I think the larger point, the takeaway, is that here you have the chairman of the Senate Banking Committee, and this is a guy who ought to be able to make sure that the money and the reporting is being done right. And what kind of confidence do these mistakes, do these oversights say about that?
And Kimberly, you reported recently for the AP, for the Associated Press, that Idaho lawmakers are concerned about a request from Governor Otter to delay finding a new healthcare provider for state employees.
Yeah, so this has been a longstanding issue for Idaho. For the past 2 years, lawmakers have been studying whether or not they should change up how the state, basically the structure of how they provide health care. They're looking at new providers. They're looking at maybe switching up the plans, not so much services, but they want to, you know, value-based. And so this year, lawmakers passed a bill. It went through JFAC, so it kind of floated a little under the radar because it's going through the public hearing process. But basically, they said in a year, by June 1st or July 1st, 2019, we will have a new contract with a new provider. Governor Otter signed the bill at the time, not raising any public concerns. And then just this week, David Hensley, Otter's chief of staff, wrote a letter to the committee that has been studying this issue saying, this timeline, we have a lot of concerns with the timeline. We think that this is too complex of an issue and we should really pump the brakes to make sure we get this right. Idaho doesn't have the best track record when it comes to big contracts. We have faced several lawsuits and have lost. So they basically were kind of warning about, let's not rush this. However, lawmakers said, we put a timeline, not just as a suggestion, but into law.
So if we pump the brakes, this may actually not comply with that law.
Right. So the governor's office says, no, this is definitely legal. And they say, like, we just need to have the proposal done. The implementation can take another year. The committee basically said, we might have to change this during the 2019 legislative session to make sure we are in full compliance.
We're speaking with Betsy Russell of the Idaho Press, Bill Manny of the Idaho Statesman, and Kimberly Crucey of the Associated Press Idaho Bureau. And we're broadcasting across the state, Magic Valley, Treasure Valley, Payette Lakes region, Wood River Valley. What issues matter to you here? You can always let us know at idahomatters@boisestate.edu. I was going to stay with you, Kimberly, to ask about horse racing. This is a topic we have covered on the program before, and we've got some new updates.
Yeah, so just today, Secretary of State Lawrence Denny confirmed that the folks backing the ballot initiative to legalize historical horse racing, which is basically these are betting terminals that people use to bet on previous horse races with non-identifiable information. They had cleared the threshold for enough signatures to qualify for the November ballot. Now, there's a second threshold that's a little bit wonky, but basically they got to make sure they have enough signatures in a variety of legislative districts. We won't know if it's officially, formally qualified until probably mid-July. At least that's how long they have till. But this is a big deal. This is the second ballot initiative that has met that threshold. The second one was Medicaid expansion. Both are going to be huge issues for Idaho and will attract big outside money.
So potentially two on the ballot this November. And as you said, they're going to cause a lot of concern, not just here in the state, outside money flowing in.
Well, and to get both of those ballot measures on the November ballot, signature gatherers were paid. And so there was more than $500,000 spent on getting the Medicaid expansion
item
on the
ballot. More than a million for the horse racing.
And then so you've already seen a demonstration of people in and out of the state willing to spend money. And so I think we should all kind of buckle our seatbelts and get prepared for a wild ride.
Well, we also wanted to wrap the bow on another story we've been following over the months, and that is the special legislative session. It is now off. And Betsy Russell, this session will no longer be needed because the parties in that long-running water dispute came to a settlement this week.
That's right. They have agreed on a settlement, and with the terms that they've agreed on now, they don't really need a special session. The matters that would require legislation can wait until January when the legislature would convene anyway. And so all sides have agreed, no special session.
And this agreement specifies then how those water rights allocations will be made. And just to kind of put the bow on that, it began in 2013. What's going to happen in the next session? Is this done and dusted?
Well, there's still legislation that would be required to implement the settlement agreement, but there are also terms laid out for what happens if the legislature doesn't pass that. They also have to go to the water court to get some decrees. But the real issue is growth in the Treasure Valley and increasing needs for water, the idea that there may be new water storage facilities created, and how that interacts with existing water rights of those in the Treasure Valley now who get water that flows down the Boise River from those three reservoirs east of town, because, of course, that's how we've made the desert bloom here.
Kimberly.
Well, there was the reason why we were kind of all hyped up about a special session, because there was a timeline crunch. And because these parties, they were in the middle of the lawsuit that had arguments on June 20th before the Idaho Supreme Court. And everyone was kind of worried, like, will the Supreme Court delay and will they put a very strict timeline to get that settlement? The Supreme Court basically said, all right, you got a settlement. We will come back sometime after July if you can't figure it out. So that really helped allow a lot more breathing room to allow these parties to come to an agreement.
And Bill.
I was just going to make the point, Tom, that, you know, if you're dissatisfied with the functioning of your government, here's a case where you had multiple parties across multiple branches of government kind of come together, figure out how to make something work, avoid an expensive special session, kind of figure out how to move ahead. And it seems like a win-win for everybody. So kind of a nice – you said put a bow on that story, but it's kind of a nice shiny bow.
We're here talking with our Friday panel of Idaho reporters. Joining us in the studio are Bill Manny of the Idaho Statesman, Kimberly Crucy of the Associated Press, and Betsy Russell with the Idaho Press. Well, the big news of the week certainly has been families separated by the border, Trump administration, and our Idaho response. Again, our Idaho delegation of lawmakers in Washington did speak about the Trump administration's policy of separating children from their parents, and this is a fast-moving story. Betsy, we heard from Senator Mike Crapo, we heard from Senator Jim Risch, and we heard from Congressman Mike Simpson. Generally, what did they say?
Well, Senator Crapo very clearly said that he believes that families should not be separated. And Representative Mike Simpson talked about immigration reform in general, but also called this situation a crisis. Senator Risch, on the other hand, made a statement that pretty much sounded like it supported the Trump administration's position in that he said no family legally trying to enter the United States should be separated, essentially suggesting, as Trump has, that if it's not legal, that's a different story.
And now, another line from his statement was no child should be punished for their parents' decision. That
right.
is, you know, buttering the bread a bit on both sides.
I suppose it is. But what was noticeable was the fourth member of our delegation who had absolutely nothing to say, despite repeated inquiries from many, many Idaho reporters, including myself. And that is our first district representative, Raul Labrador, a former immigration lawyer who has made immigration his top issue throughout his service in Congress and has been heavily involved in immigration reform, in negotiations to come up with immigration reform measures. He has had no comment to the Idaho media pretty much ever since the primary election, in which he lost in his bid to become the Republican nominee for governor.
Well, could that be the case for a lame duck politician just to kind of say peace out?
Well, I mean, he has given extensive interviews to the national media. It really, I mean, from our perspective here right now, it kind of looks like just a little bit of sour grapes. But he still represents Idaho, and his constituents are here. And I think they would like to know where he stands on immigration.
And he was passionate about immigration before he ran for governor. And he made it pretty clear that even while he was running for governor, the immigration was going to be one of his top issues. So, his silence has just been deafening.
I mean, and he is smart about this. It would be worthwhile hearing his perspectives. He's studied this and really knows it inside and out. I was going to tell you, Tom, that one of the things I do at the Statesman is collect the opinions and letters that we get on topics. And I've received more op-ed pieces on this issue from Idaho writers than I think on any other in such a short period of time. And one of the issues is the story changes so much. So many of those opinions that people write are outdated by events. But it's really touched a nerve among Idahoans as well. I'm a little cynical about the late to the game responses from the congressional delegation. It was pretty obvious by the time they came out with their condemnations of this policy that's what the constituents, that's what every citizen in the country was saying.
You had other politicians in nearby states, such as Utah leadership, Lieutenant Governor, I believe, tweeting, "I can't sleep tonight. I need to make a statement." And that was those are quite powerful. Again, Congressman Mike Simpson, the current system is clearly broken and the status quo is unacceptable. We've been talking about a broken immigration system for a good long time, and everyone's kind of pointing at each other.
Yes, and I think you have seen that from Idaho's Democratic leaders. Just we had this week the Boise City Council coming out against, you know, calling on leaders to take action. You saw the Democratic caucus from inside the Idaho legislature wrote a letter to Governor Otter asking him to limit resources if called upon to go to the border. To be fair, Governor Otter has not been asked, and we do not have National Guard members at the border right now. We have not had any children sent here, but basically, the Democrats asked, "Hey, we know the situation is fluid, and just because it's the policy one day, who knows what's the policy the next day?" And we feel like Otter should come out and say something.
Speaking of those changing policies, President Trump tweeted today, "Republicans should stop wasting their time on immigration until after the November election."
That complete 180 from just a couple days ago.
Yeah, but you got to sympathize for the Republican members of Congress trying to navigate with that kind of back and forth from the president. I wondered when you were reading that statement from Senator Risch talking about not wanting to punish children for the sins of the parents, if that's going to influence his position on DACA. Now, clearly, the DACA issue would be one of those that Trump is urging members of Congress not to come back till after the election. But I'm wondering if this reaction to this issue is going to change some minds on other immigration issues involving children.
Well, certainly DACA, as you said, and certainly family separation at the border and immigration as a whole continues to be an election issue. Now, it's hard to predict into our summer election season or our fall election season what this might mean for candidates on both sides in Idaho in November.
I mean, we have so much possibly poised for the November election. I think we're going to see a lot of people getting out and vote. They can kind of pick what issue they want, you know, when it comes to Medicaid expansion, immigration, horse racing, or just the governor's race. I think we're going to – it's kind of an exciting time to be an Idaho voter right now just because of there's a lot of really interesting and important topics right now that's going to be before them.
Kimberly, you're saying that there are a lot of issues that might drive people to the polls.
I hope so, but yes, I mean, having ballot initiatives, having high-profile races, open races, I think that all contributes to higher voter turnout.
And immigration has very long been an emotional and top-tier issue in Idaho elections, even though you know, we are a border state, but our border is with Canada. We are very far from southern border.
We are an ag state, though. We rely a lot on migrant workers and to make sure that our topic industries are, you know, pumping out money.
The immigration dynamic in Idaho is largely driven by agriculture interests, and so it's a much more nuanced position than just pro or con. And Idaho has a unique position, and we're not a border state, but we do have a lot of interests that are tied to those issues.
And a lot of these issues are talking about people from Mexico and Latin America, and we do have a relatively low Latino population. State ranks 33rd in nation for Latino population, but as you said, a big contributor to our agricultural economy as far as the labor force.
And also our Latino population, I believe, is our largest minority population in Idaho. It is a significant community in the state.
And immigration has been a huge issue for some of the biggest employers in the state, including Micron and HP. And so they are not hiring migrant farm workers, but they do have serious issues involving getting people here from other countries as well.
You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm your host, Tom Michael. Next week on the program, we'll discuss changes to the Idaho trespassing law. A new amendment goes into effect on July 1st with changes to the Idaho code that you might see on no trespassing signs. What do you want to know about the law? You can ask us your questions in advance via email. Our email is idahomatters@boisestate.edu or call in with a voice message, 208-426-3625. Once again, that's 208-426-3625. We're with Betsy Russell of the Idaho Press, Bill Manny of the Statesman, and Kimberly Cruzy of AP Idaho Bureau. And we just got some news about this primary campaign. Oftentimes this happens where people file what they spent, and the numbers are astounding. Kimberly.
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone here has reported on the high. We just saw a ton of money. If you missed, it would be hard to miss all the TV ads and flyers that we saw. But the gubernatorial race, which has currently an open seat because Bridgewater is not running for a fourth term, had a total of $11 million spent, which is just I mean, maybe for other states, it might be a drop in the bucket. But for Idaho, this was unprecedented.
And, of course, this is just through the primary. Yeah. I mean, we still have the general election ahead.
Yeah, and we also had a high amount of independent expenditures, which is third-party spending. Normally, in a year, in an entire election year, we will spend about $1.2, $1.5 million. We had more than $1 million just in the primary alone. We are poised up for a
So $11 million for the gubernatorial race, and you said unprecedented. What are the stats for previous races?
It blew them away.
It blew them, yeah.
I think.
Yeah. plus you had A.J. Bluecoff and Tommy Ahlquist spending, wealthy men who are spending from their own pockets. So you on top of kind of your general campaign spending, you had this other factor, which I think contributed substantially.
Plus a three-way race really at the
Absolutely.
Top in the Republican primary. So that much more competition, that much more pressure.
Now, the general election, we expect spending to continue. Spending might even come from zip codes other than Idaho. Is that right?
Yeah. I'll just jump in here. But what's frustrating about Idaho is that we will not know until the final weeks of the election. Idaho's – and when I say frustrating, is just as reporters, we love knowing who is backing, who is really pulling the strings behind a campaign. And we do not know that in Idaho because we have very limited windows of when reporting actually has to be made public. And so I'm sure we're going to see a lot of campaign spending between now and November, but we will not know how much and who's doing it really until October.
But to your point, Tom, we had outside spending on both the Democratic gubernatorial race as well as those two ballot measures. And so I think you're right. There are issues in Idaho in November that are going to be of interest to people nationwide.
Well, also, this issue of reporting is something that our legislature has been wrestling with. And a bill was introduced this past year to greatly increase the reporting so that it would happen much sooner. It's particularly a problem with the primary election where there are no reports all the way from January till a week before the election. We have a few more reports in the fall, but monthly reports would make sense. And that's what's in that bill. It has not yet passed. It will be considered again next year.
You know, in the time remaining, I thought we would not just talk about politics, but about other issues. And yes, the Boise River is open for floating, but I didn't want to just focus on that. I wanted to ask about Boise State Athletics, Bill. This is unusual, right? There was a draft pick for the Chicago Bulls coming right off the roster here at Boise State.
Exactly. Chandler Hutchison, star of the Boise State basketball team, went number 22 to the Chicago Bulls last night. And my friend Mike Prater tweeted out that not only do we have a number one round draft choice for the NBA, this also comes after a number one first-round draft choice for the NFL, and that's the first time in Boise State history that you've had athletes go in the first round for both primary sports. Now, if you don't care about Boise State, if you don't care about basketball, if you don't care about football, why should you care? Here's why I think you should care. It's a giant promotion for the university and for those programs, and if those coaches and those programs can get people into the professional leagues, that's going to help them with recruiting.
And so this program is maturing. Well, I'd like to thank Bill Manny, Kimberly Crucey, and Betsy Russell for our Friday Reporters Roundtable. Thanks to you all.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.